Hi, I'm Aaron Mee, inviting you to tune in for Community Matters on Sunday morning starting at 8:30, brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services. Join us as we talk through issues that matter most to you right here in Warren. 8:30 a.m. Sunday morning, brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services on the Greatest Hits 92 Gold.
This is Community Matters on 92 Gold. If it matters to you, it's on Community Matters.
Thank you for joining me for the Community Matters program on 104.3 Kinzu Country and 92 Gold. And joining me on the Community Matters program today is Laura Bigger, and you're an artist that has been exhibiting art in a bunch of different places. And one of the things that I'm curious to be able to talk to you about is your exhibit that's coming to the Crary Art Gallery, and it's going to be coming through the month of April. And it's about some really interesting uses of raw materials and designs and stuff like that. So Laura, thank you for taking the time to join me.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad that we could be able to talk about this, because you work with a lot of really cool materials, and I'm excited to learn about your inspiration with that. But what I wanted to start with is, what inspired you to work on this kind of art, and how did you really get your start with your career in this?
I've been interested in raw materials for quite a while. And actually, I first became interested in food as a raw material. At the most basic, I'm sort of interested in like how we as humans kind of progressed from like basic needs to like luxury, or how we like find interest in materials that we think are maybe more valuable because they're more rare or they have a certain beauty, and then how that ties in from an environmental standpoint into like our impact on the earth. But I also think my parents are both artists types. Like, my dad's a machinist and my mom's a ceramicist. And I think that they always were interested in like how things are made. And so like one of the things that I think is really fun is that you can like go on YouTube and find out how something was made or like where something comes from. And I think it's something that we overlook a lot because we're so far in like a technological advancement that we just take a lot of stuff for granted. So I'm interested in kind of going back and thinking like, well, where does this come from? How much work like went into extracting it from the earth and then transporting it or altering it to a state where we can use it? So a lot of my work is inspired by those kind of interests.
It's really unique how you use these raw materials to make these certain things. And I love the one sculpture that you have that I was able to look at, and that was Rug, I believe it's called. And, you know, I love the use of raw material that you have with cotton and with wool and, you know, using it to make that. And it's really interesting to see. And especially when you look at now, you know, talking about how it's created and how it's made and brought over here, and, you know, the impact that it has on the environment the whole way through, it's really fascinating to be able to learn about.
Yeah. And so that piece utilizes the wool from a single sheep that was shorn in Minnesota. So it's like one season's worth of wool from one sheep. And I got it in cloud form, like if you're familiar with types of roving, but it's not yet like tightened or spun into anything. And I kind of worked it into this like cloud-like braided rug so that, well, and part of the base is like a felted kind of base, but so that you can visualize like, yeah, rugs are made of wool, but then you can kind of see the sheep, like the evidence of the sheep, and really maybe pay homage to like the effort that the sheep put into this kind of contribution to like what we use on a daily basis. So it's that kind of thinking that inspires the projects. There's also a whole series of drawings, which are actually what will be, you know, mixed media works on paper that will be in the Crary, but yeah.
You know, you use a large variety of really cool raw materials in some of these, gypsum being one of them. How do you go about getting some of these raw materials that you use? I mean, that was really interesting to learn about how you get the wool there.
Mostly eBay. I'm just sourcing. Some of what I'm using is like geologic samples that maybe would normally go to a classroom setting. So you would see like an example of different kinds of ore or different minerals. And some things like we buy in different contexts. Like there are weird uses, like silk cocoons people for some reason are using as an exfoliant, which I find to be unnecessarily really extravagant. But so you can find silk cocoons through like beauty product sites or like other raw materials you can get through like gardening sources because, you know, perlite or something like that we're using in a gardening context. So it's partly just figuring out where things are being utilized. And then there's inevitably everything is being sold somewhere. So you just have to find it.
That makes a sense. That's really interesting then. It's a unique way and certainly a challenge that it would bring in trying to, you know, make some of these pieces of art. Now, one of the things that I'm curious about now, understanding that a lot of these things are based on the idea of a room from what I was reading a little bit, the thing that I was curious about, these rooms that these things are based on, you know, looking at the cloud there, that would be more of like a bedroom type of thing. How do you come up with the connections there? Because it's really interesting. One of the things that I started thinking is like a house looks different to a lot of different people and, you know, houses can be in a ton of different settings and stuff like that. When you like look at what you consider a house, where do you imagine it? Is it like a little house on a prairie or is it like a row house in San Francisco? Or is it like, you know, a little like a house on stilts next to like a waterfront? Where do you imagine it?
I'm from Colorado originally, and now I live in Missouri and I've lived in Reno and Minneapolis. As far as like inspiration in a home, I think the most inspiring like home architecture I experienced was in Minneapolis because so many of the homes were built in 1900 and there was just a boom there with the fur trade and with wood logging and the railroad went through there. So the wealth at that time allowed these homes to have like pretty amazing built-in woodwork and really nice like maple flooring and just some really nice features. So that's something I think of as like a beautiful home. But when I'm picture for this project, I'm thinking more bare bones. So I usually think of like, not necessarily like a shotgun house, but maybe just a pretty small, almost like a 50s bungalow or something where there's like a living room, excuse me, like a dining room, a kitchen, and a bathroom and a bedroom. So like just a single one of each. And I'm thinking more about like, why do we have these rooms? So like the dining room is for eating, but that's because eating is really culturally important to us as humans. And so we dedicate an entire room to that. And the table is kind of this place where people come together around food. And then the living room is sort of an unnecessary room in theory. Like what do we do there? Well, we sit around and gather with other people and maybe we keep warm. So like, I think of like the fireplace or like the wood burning stove, or to go like maybe backwards, it's just like the fireplace or the fire pit rather that you would like hunker down around the fire. So I'm thinking of that more on an intuitive level that like the living room is a place for the way we like culturally engage with family or friends. And then, you know, the kitchen and dining room as places we engage with food. And I haven't even addressed those places yet, like in this long-term project that I'm trying to complete. And then the bedroom is just about sleeping, but when you sleep, you want to feel safe and warm and comfortable. So that's where I focused on fabrics. So that's the most fleshed out kind of room, I suppose, in that I have like the rug and then a bed sculpture video. And then the drawings that go in that room include linen, crude oil to represent synthetic fibers. And the crude oil kind of is like in a way, it's like the keystone piece because it represents like the oil use to transport everything. It represents all of the synthetics. So it's holding up a lot in my mind, the crude oil drawing. But yes, there's also like a cotton and a wool, let's see, linen and silk. So I kind of emphasize those raw materials in the bedroom. And then the bathroom is really just a place to deal with the human body kind of, but to me, it's focused around water because either you're washing yourself or you're washing things away. And that's like the essence of it. And grooming, I suppose, if you want to think about that. I've been trying to kind of think about the most basic components of those spaces and why we have them. and then to try to interpret that sort of poetically in the pieces that I'm making.
It's so cool that you break it down like that into what would really be like the essentials, you know? I mean, and that's the thing, because what you're describing really are, you're breaking down, when you look at a house, you break down the essential, you know, reasons for these rooms being in existence to begin with, but then it's really unique that you're also breaking it down to a further level of then, you know, what are the actual materials, elements, things that are used to make this happen. And I think that that's really cool, especially when you break it down, especially thinking about the connotation between fire and the living room. And then that's something that I really hadn't thought about before, but when you look at it in the past and in history, that's always been where people would gather, is, you know, near or around the fire. And, you know, it really does make sense when you think about it like that. It's a really interesting perspective to take on that. Now, you know, with that being said, I'm curious, have you taken this exhibition to a lot of other places before?
Yeah, it's exhibited probably more widely than any other body of work I've made. And I have honestly had a bit of a lull in making new work for it, but it's not that I'm over it. It's just that I'm really overextended. And so, yeah, it's shown in Kansas and Nevada and Missouri and Minnesota. It's been around a little bit, and now it's going to Pennsylvania. Oh, and it showed in Fredericksburg, Virginia. So yeah, it's kind of making the rounds.
That is really awesome. And, you know, it's so cool to see it being able to travel to all these different places and get an impact on all these different communities. Now, one of the things that I'm curious to be able to talk about with this is, you know, when you're looking at these exhibitions, obviously the places where they're going to be exhibited in are different, you know, at each location. Do you have a lot of say, or how much say do you have, or are you allowed to have? Does it depend on the venue as to setting up and, you know, exhibiting these? Or is it just with these, you just kind of have a blank slate and you could do it however you'd like to?
There is like a practical aspect to it, and it does depend on the space. So what has exhibited most widely with this series of work is the two-dimensional pieces, because they're wall-mounted. They're relatively small, like they're 10 by 21 inches. And then there's a shelf component, like a floating shelf that mounts below each drawing typically. And it's pretty shippable. I'm able to send it in a relatively small couple of boxes. And then some galleries, like actually the Crary, where I'm exhibiting in Pennsylvania, because it's a paneled and it's like a historic building, as I understand it, they don't want to put holes in the wall. And so I'm not actually able to mount the shelf component of this work, but the drawings are really rich in themselves. And so it can kind of get away with not having that component, even though it is my preference that they would have the shelves mounted below the drawings, because each of the shelves is like a mini altar sort of that holds the raw material that the drawing is talking about. And so, yeah, there have been iterations that just show the drawings with the shelves. And then sometimes when I've shown it, it has been with the sculptural components that I have, but I haven't finished the sculptural set. Like, I'm still working on a few of the bigger projects. And I've even been adapting like the bed piece I've installed like two or three times, I think. And it involves loose down feathers. And it's been kind of like a nightmare, because corralling loose down is really hard. And then if there's any like airflow in the space, it's really problematic. So I've reconsidered that. And I have like silk organza that I've purchased, and I'm going to make like a sheer comforter with it. But that's like a whole learning curve for me. Like, I'm a printmaker by training, and so now I have to like learn how to sew silk organza and make this comforter. And, you know, all of these things take time that I just need to, yeah, like figure it out. So all that to say, like, yes, there are these different iterations, and it kind of depends on where I am in the process and what the gallery space will allow and what, like, how big it is or what it can accommodate. So
Okay, well, that is really interesting. It's interesting that there are some factors in there that I really didn't think about, but I'm glad that you were able to mention that sometimes that when you do show this, there are altars and that people are able to see that if they check out your website, which I think is really great. But, you know, we'll be able to talk about that in a second. One of the things that I'm curious to be able to ask you about, though, because I, you know, just started thinking about it when you brought that up. What do you think when you look at some of these raw materials, which one of these raw materials that you've worked with in the past has given you the hardest learning curve? Or what do you think is proposed or shown the most challenge when you're looking at a raw material to work with?
That's a good question. I'm just trying to think. Some of these drawings I've done have packed in a lot of information. And I think sometimes I am trying to maybe convey more than I need to, I made one to represent coal, and that kind of like crude oil, it's like coal is representing a lot, as far as like energy use. And I want to convey like how coal was formed, like on a geologic level. That's like interesting to me. And then how it's mined and kind of speak to like mountaintop removal in the US while also respecting it as a material. And so, you know, I'm trying to pack a lot into these pieces. And then some of them, like gypsum, was a little bit more like a poetic. I just chose to simplify the piece and I used the crystalline. There's four crystalline structures that gypsum can kind of manifest in. And so I used those as part of the core of that piece and used some of the more like ethereal, for lack of a better word, like associations that people have with gypsum as part of the inspiration for that piece. And it's much simpler. So sometimes I think I can get bogged down, like overthinking, you know, what I need to like try to contain in each piece.
When you're looking at the raw materials and use of raw materials in these pieces, do you ever use three or four different raw materials and think, okay, you know, this is good, and then afterward want to add in more? But do you limit yourself when you're using, like when you're working with a certain piece, is there a limit to how many different raw materials you'll allow yourself to use in that piece? Or do you just kind of use however many?
So mostly each piece is just meant to represent like one raw material, but then in the shelves there, so each shelf is walnut and it's just like a floating walnut shelf with a little recess kind of drilled out of it. So there's always wood, and I contemplated like making a piece about wood, but that also felt really vast. And I thought, well, wood is going to be represented everywhere. Like it's always present. It's going to be in the shelves. It's in the frames, you know, it's probably on the floor in the gallery. And so I thought, well, maybe I won't do wood, but then the pieces themselves, mostly they're graphite, watercolor, and then some of them have printmaking techniques in them. Like there's some screen printing, some oil-based monotype, trying to think what else. Yeah. So it's mostly that. And then I've considered using like the literal element or material in some of the pieces. Like I haven't made copper yet, and you know, you can do copper leaf and I know how to do that. And so I could be really literal about it, but I haven't really decided like how I'm going to handle that. And at the moment there's only one piece per raw material, but I've also considered making multiples, like, you know, some kind of a different piece, but still based on the same raw material as something else I've made. But I'm making them so slowly that I haven't really got that far. So yeah, like I guess I don't think too hard about what is in the watercolors themselves or what's in the screen printing ink, or like all of them are on BFK Reeves paper at the moment. But that could change too, because so I decided the arched top was really important to me. And so I had custom arched frames, like CNC routed to match the shape of the drawings. And then I had like laser cut plexi to match those frames. And so I just had a new set of those made up. And because I'm using like 3/4 inch or 1 inch plywood for that, the result of the interior of the frames was a bunch of arched wood pieces that are like the same size as my drawings. And so I was thinking, you know, I might do some pieces on panel that will then like correspond to the framed drawings. So yeah, it's not too rigid as far as like the materials in the drawings. For the sculptures, I do think it's important. Like a lot of the time I'm trying to use natural materials, but you know, you can't always, from a practical standpoint, you can't always stick to that. Like, I don't think I'll have very much choice in the thread I use for the silk organza, because I'm probably going to take the advice of the quilting specialist that I talk to, things like that. So yeah.
Shipping these things, how much of a challenge does that prove to be when you're trying to move different things like that?
Sometimes if it's within driving distance, I would rather just deliver. And by that, I mean like maybe 6 hours or less or something. If it's pretty far, if there's funding, I'm happy to come to the show. If there's not funding, it's just not very feasible, like logistically for artists. Like you're paying typically for shipping and like return shipping plus all of like your time and the artwork and stuff. And like these, I'm not selling because I'm not done with the project and I really want it to be like a complete unit. And so, yeah, I can't necessarily afford to just like come to the opening or like leave work to do that. Like most galleries require that you frame with plexiglass these days because they want to avoid like opening a box and having shattered glass, which is understandable. In that sense, like the frames aren't very fragile. And because it's a single unit routed with an arch top, they're actually pretty strong because they don't have a joint. So I think these are maybe the least risky of the prints or like 2D works that I ship. Like I just shipped a really large print and it got jostled enough that one of the corners of the frame like kind of broke, even though I thought I packed it really well. So it is a risk.
How long do you think it takes for just a single piece?
Yeah, I've thought about that. I mean, I think a lot of the drawings have like maybe 40 hours in them or something for like a 10 and a half by 21 inch piece. It's not that big, but a lot of them are pretty dense. Or they have, if I'm using printmaking, I'm really carefully matching a layer of printmaking to an existing drawing typically. And so it's like, I only get one shot because it's a one-off. Whereas typically in printmaking, like maybe you're making an edition and you can print on proofs and everything. Part of it is like developing these layers with a lot of care so that I can just get it right the first time. So yeah, they have quite a bit of time in them. And also the planning, because I'm usually doing research. Yeah. And I have no idea how long to calculate for that, but trying to learn about the material, like learning about tin was really interesting because I didn't really know where it was mined or how it was mined, but it's like totally crazy. And it's mined like underwater in really unsafe conditions in a lot of instances. And then I became kind of interested in its, well, like tin ceilings we're all familiar with because they're really beautiful. And it's kind of this antique thing that you like walk into an old building and you look up and you think like, oh, that's great. They got rid of their drop ceiling from whatever decade. And now they've re-revealed their like beautiful tin ceiling. And so I thought about it like from that decor standpoint, but I also learned that molten tin is used to make sheet glass like perfectly flat. So you can like, they suspend the molten glass over the tin. And I guess with the density or relative densities, that works out to make like perfect sheet glass. And so, you know, then I go down rabbit holes, like learning about how that stuff works or trying to watch videos of things and thinking about how I could integrate that into a piece. And tin is in PVC. So I'm thinking about plumbing it, you know, it'll just kind of, it takes me a while to think about like what I want to put into the drawing. So my website is laurabigger.com. There's a section called Elements that is about the series of work that will be in the Crary. And then there's like a printmaking section, which is my specialty and it's what I teach at university. And then there are other projects that are kind of one-offs or commission projects on there. And I have an Instagram that's at Laura Bigger. Forget if there's a dot or a dash in there, but I think you'll be able to find me. I haven't been very active on it lately, but it kind of comes in waves.
Thank you for taking the time to join me, Laura.
Thank you so much.
Lakeshore Community Services has a number you're going to love. $2,000. That's our current sign-on bonus amount and start at $1,560 an hour. We offer a 403B, great benefits, and have 36 years of serving people with disabilities in Erie, Warren, Ridgeway, and Kane. Apply right now at lakeshorecs.org. That's lakeshorecs.org. 2,000 more reasons for us to say you're going to love it at Lakeshore Community Services.
Community Matters on 92 Gold.
I'm really excited to be able to talk with you and learn about the exhibit that you're going to be doing. And that is the lever of reference. And I think that that's going to be really interesting to get a little bit of background on. Now, you are from Buffalo. What part of Buffalo are you from? And do you use some of the industry that's in Buffalo, like some of the industrial areas and stuff, as like a type of inspiration for your work?
Sure, definitely. Yeah, I'm from North Buffalo, specifically Riverside is where I grew up. And it's sort of a mixed industrial and residential area. So there's growing up, there were, you know, a lot of factories, abandoned factories and working factories. And, you know, instead of going and playing in a park, you know, my friends and I would maybe go play in an area where there was some abandoned machines. And, you know, so we always thought that was really cool. And I think that definitely influenced the type of art that I make now, sort of that kind of industrial aesthetic.
Well, that's pretty cool. I like the industrial aesthetic. And, you know, it's really interesting the way that you do it. And that's the one thing that I'm really interested to be able to talk to you about, because you create these art pieces and you're making them now, but the style that which you make these, and you know, especially when you look at the paintings and some of the other stuff, there's a little bit of like a tinge and a hint of nostalgia to it, which I think is really nice and fascinating. And I'm interested to learn how you incorporate that into your work.
Yeah, well, it's you know, I did study art history, and you know, so I think that nostalgic sort of feeling comes through in that way, because you know, when I was a kid, I was fascinated with art and reading art books. And, you know, I would see early 20th century art that was very sort of mechanistic and abstract. And it just, you know, it made sense to me because that was the sort of environment that I grew up in. So it was, you know, just something that naturally attracted me. So now when I make art, it's tends to sort of hark back to early 20th century abstract art, because that's always just what has fascinated me. So, and I do like the forms generally, you know, they do look like they're weathered and they're old and they've been around for a while. So there's, you know, that sort of nostalgic feeling comes through that way as well.
Your art form like this, it is in both, you know, paintings, but also it's in sculptures, and you also have paperworks as well. And when you look at some of these things, it's cool because you follow a similar aesthetic and flow as you move through those. What I'm curious is, when you're looking at the different things that you're using, the different materials, does that impact what you use for the material that you put on that, or what you put into it? Because obviously the sculptures, that material that you're going to use might be a little different than what you're using in the paintings, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, paintings are a little different. I think paintings are kind of sort of unique in that, you know, it's just the canvas and the paint, and you're providing everything, you know, everything that you're bringing to the table comes from your own head and your memories and things like that. But it's a lot different with the sculpture and collages, because you have objects that you found, objects that are laying around, you know, things that maybe prints that I've done that I'll incorporate into the sculpture. And there's a mixture of things that I've made myself, you know, combined with pieces of material, pieces of machines, pieces of metal, things that I've found. So it's kind of a different process, because objects that you have sort of spark your creativity and maybe lead you in a different direction that you might have never thought of if you were just in front of a canvas and inventing everything out of your own head. So
some of the stuff that you have, whether it be in a sculpture or in a painting, some of the things that come together almost look like they could be like asymmetrical puzzle pieces, or, you know, things to a similar nature where it almost, and one of the things that I looked at in one of the paintings was it almost looks like it would be like a lock and key, but almost mm-hmm. like what you would have to assemble it based, like using the pieces, you would assemble the key for the lock, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I definitely, that definitely makes sense. And I think that's probably, again, the influence of my environment when I was a kid, you know, just seeing sort of abandoned machines and things that were laying around sort of partially disassembled. And I always found them fascinating because you could tell that they had some unique purpose, but you couldn't tell what it was. You didn't know what they really did when they were operating and they're, you know, half disassembled. There's kind of a mysterious aspect to that, that you're looking at something that you really don't know where it came from, what its purpose is, but it obviously, you know, is something that was constructed for a very specific purpose.
You would be seeing things and objects that would be like that, exploring old factories and things like that in industrial areas like that. Now, you take a little bit of inspiration from what I understand from architecture, and you're in Buffalo. Buffalo is a, you know, a great architecture city when you look at the variety of architecture that's there. Is there any particular buildings in Buffalo or pieces of architecture that like really call to you, or that, you know, you really prefer? Is there,
you know, I don't sort of restrict myself to being interested in a certain type of a certain style of architecture, but definitely, you know, there's a lot of beautiful industrial buildings here. And I'm also fascinated by buildings that are really, you know, you wouldn't consider architectural masterpieces, but they're, you know, just in the environment. And part of the interest is that they're falling apart, they're decaying, they're rusting, you know, and sometimes that can be really beautiful. So, you know, some of those buildings that you might just pass by and not even think twice about are sometimes really fascinating. But definitely the grain elevators here are just really gorgeous buildings. And I've had a chance to take some tours of the grain elevators, which were very inspirational. Being able to go inside and see the inner workings of it is just, you know, they're just awe-inspiring how huge they are and complex the inner workings of those buildings are. So they are sort of like giant machines themselves.
What's fascinating, like what you're saying and what I was actually thinking with that is, you know, you see these buildings that are designed and built for the specific purpose of whatever you're looking at with it. When you look at a grain silo, for example, you know, the entire largeness of the building and every single individual interior crevice of it is built with that intention and that explicit intent in mind. And it's fascinating, like what you've mentioned, to be able to see some of it in disrepair and stuff, because it's like, this was never the intention of it, but that's always, you know, when it looks really unique and where people can get inspiration from it.
Yeah, definitely. It's you do get the feeling when you go into one of those buildings that every single part, like you said, had a purpose and fit together in a very unique way. And I think that's sort of how my sculptures especially work. They're, you know, they take a long time for me to put them together because I just have sort of a feeling about how everything should go together. And it's sometimes it's very time consuming to get it to that point. So there's a lot of trial and error but in the end, I like that feeling that all the individual parts are just placed exactly where they should be. Even if it looks like it might be something old and in disrepair, you know, there's definitely, you can tell that there's a design behind it, not just sort of haphazardly organized things sort of thrown together.
Some of the pieces that you use for that and some of the materials that you use when you're making this, they take a long time to work with and to set, like when you're using concrete and stuff like that in these sculptures, like it is a time consuming process for you, especially when you're doing that, because, you know, you have to wait for that to set in its mold and then you move on to the next process.
Yeah, definitely. The concrete takes a while. And I also use laser cut MDF pieces that are manufactured. I have them manufactured for me and putting those together in just the right way is sometimes time consuming. And even when I use found objects, a sculpture might sit around my studio for months waiting for just the right piece to finish it. And until I stumble across that piece somewhere, you know, it's sort of incomplete. So it does take a while to put them together.
That's really interesting. Now, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about with this that I'm curious is, you know, when you're looking at the upcoming show that you're going to have at the Crary, this exhibition, what are you going to be mainly focusing on with that? Is it going to be a mixture of paintings and sculptures, or is it going to be just one or the other?
It will be a mixture. I sort of think of the sculptures as the heart of the show, because they're most of the pieces that are new are sculpture. But I didn't want to restrict myself to just three-dimensional pieces as well, because I think it's interesting to see how the formal development has happened between, you know, from where I started with painting and then moving into sculpture. And I think the paintings help to illuminate the sculpture and vice versa. So, you know, I thought it was important to have a representative showing of the paintings and prints and things like that. Even graphite drawings, because I do use those techniques in the sculpture. Some of the sculpture have painted elements and drawings involved and monoprints and things like that. So there are, you know, a few different techniques involved in each sculpture. So,
well, that's really fascinating. And it's definitely means that it's a lot of work for each one. And it's a lot of work to be able to move all that stuff down here. When you're doing that and coming down for a show like this, do you usually like put it in your own vehicle and take it down? What is the best way to do it to make sure it gets here safely?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, luckily the sculptures are mostly, you know, fairly small. I think the largest one is 17 inches tall. And the paintings are probably the largest one is like 24 by 36. So they're not enormous pieces where I'd need to get a van or anything. So I'll just put them in my SUV and package them up carefully and it'll be pretty full, you know, I'll be able to get it down there myself. So, I won't have to worry about somebody else transporting it and possibly damaging things. So.
What is the best way that people can get in touch with you to get more information on your work? Because you've got a really cool website that's got some information up about some of the work that you do. And it's really pretty neat to be able to look at some of the other stuff you've done.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the best way for people to contact me and to see more of my work is my website, which is thomasmatias.com. It's M-A-T-Y-A-S. If you're interested in the work, that's definitely the place to go. And there's contact info for me on there if you want to reach out.
Your exhibition is going to be available at the Crary Art Gallery, and that's going to be April 2nd through May 1st, I believe. And the Crary Art Gallery, they're open noon to 6 Friday, noon to 6 on Saturday, and noon to 4 on Sundays. And so you can check out the exhibition there and definitely make sure you check out the website, because the art that you do is, you know, it's really pretty amazing. The sculpture work has been really unique to be able to see. And, you know, I definitely encourage anybody, if they're not able to see it in person, to go to the website and check it out there, because it's definitely really amazing.
Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to join me today. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, it's been fun.
Hi, I'm Aaron Mee, and I'm inviting you to tune in to Community Matters Sunday morning starting 8:30 a.m. brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services. Join us as we talk through the issues that matter to you right here in Warren at 8:30 a.m. Sunday morning, brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services on Warren's Country Station, 104.3 Kinzu Country.
Lakeshore Community Services has a number you're going to love, $2,000. That's our current sign-on bonus amount. And start at $15.60 an hour. We offer a 403B, great benefits, and have 36 years of serving people with disabilities in Erie, Warren, Ridgeway, and Kane. Apply right now at lakeshorecs.org. That's lakeshorecs.org. 2,000 more reasons for us to say you're going to love it at Lakeshore Community Services.